Recorded Books presents an unabridged recording of The True Confessions of Charlotte Doyle by Avi, narrated by Alexandra Okarma.
An important warning. Not every 13-year-old girl is accused of murder, brought to trial, and found guilty. But I was just such a girl, and my story is worth relating, even if it did happen years ago. Be warned, however, this is no story of a bad boy, no what Katie did. If strong ideas and action offend you, read no more. Find another companion to share your idle hours. For my part, I intend to tell the truth as I lived it. But before I begin relating what happened, you must know something about me as I was in the year 1832, when these events transpired. At the time, my name was Charlotte Doyle. And though I have kept the name, I am not, for reasons you will soon discover, the same Charlotte Doyle. How shall I describe the person I once was? At the age of 13, I was very much a girl, having not yet begun to take the shape, much less the heart, of a woman. Still, my family dressed me as a young woman, bonnet covering my beautiful hair, full skirts, high-buttoned shoes, and, you may be sure, white gloves. I certainly wanted to be a lady. It was not just my ambition, it was my destiny. I embraced it wholly, gladly, with not an untoward thought of anything else. In other words, I think that at the time of these events, I was not anything more or less than what I appeared to be, an acceptable, ordinary girl of parents in good standing. Though American-born, I spent the years between my 6th and 13th birthdays in England. My father, who engaged in the manufacture of cotton goods, functioned as an agent for an American business there. But in the early spring of 1832, he received an advancement and was summoned home. My father, an ardent believer in regularity and order, decided it would be better if I finished out my school term rather than break it off mid-year. My mother, whom I never knew to disagree with him, accepted my father's decision. I would follow my parents, as well as my younger brother and sister, to our true home, which was in Providence, Rhode Island. Lest you think that my parents' judgment was rash in allowing me to travel without them, I will show you how reasonable, even logical, their decision was. First, they felt that by my remaining a boarder at the Barrington School for Better Girls, Miss Weed, eminent and most proper headmistress, I would lose no school time. Second, I would be crossing the Atlantic, a trip that could last anywhere from 1 to 2 months, during the summer, when no formal education took place. Third, I was to make my voyage upon a ship owned and operated by my father's firm. Fourth, the captain of the ship had acquired a reputation, so my father informed me, for quick and profitable Atlantic crossings. Then there was this. Two families known to my parents had also booked passage on the ship. The adults had promised to function as my guardians. Having been told only that these families included children, 3 lovely girls and a charming boy, I had looked forward to meeting them more than anything else. So when you consider that I had but dim memories of making the crossing to England when I was 6, you will understand that I saw the forthcoming voyage as all a lark. A large, beautiful boat, jolly sailors, no school to think about, companions of my own age. One more point. I was given a volume of blank pages, how typical of my father, and instructed to keep a daily journal of my voyage across the ocean, so that the writing of it should prove of educational value to me. Indeed, my father warned me that not only would he read the journal and comment upon it, but he would pay particular attention to spelling, not my strongest suit. Keeping that journal then is what enables me to relate now in perfect detail everything that transpired during that fateful voyage across the Atlantic Ocean in the summer of 1832.